This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the government could soon read your mail without a warrant, and a memo signed last spring could make records of those who visit the White House private. Joining us today is Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Commission, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the city's television show Beat the Press, that city being Boston, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, Professor of Globalization and Education and Co-Director of Immigration Studies at NYU. He's in Southampton, New York. So thanks, everybody, for being with us. And let's talk about this mail thing. So I love getting mail. I got a lot of Christmas cards. I wouldn't want anybody interfering with them. But President George Bush signed a statement recently that may allow the government to open mail without a warrant. I don't want anybody getting my aunt's cards, especially with the little spangles inside. Anyway, the White House denies any change in policy. However, the signed Postal Reform Act reads that the Bush administration would construe that provision, quote, in a manner consistent to the maximum extent possible with the needs to conduct searches in exigent circumstances. That's very lawyerly language. Some members of Congress want the president to clarify his intentions, including Senator Susan Collins, who pushed the bill through. She spoke with NBC News.
I was really surprised. There was absolutely nothing in the postal reform bill that in any way diminished or changed the privacy protection for domestic sealed mail.
So, Callie, we just heard a lot of legal language. What's going to happen to our holiday cards?
They can open them up if they want to. I mean, exigent circumstances in this way, in the way that I believe, in the way that the Bush administration means it, is that to allow any opening at any time if they suspect that there could be some possible link to terrorism. Well, that's just a broad stroke. We've already seen some evidence of this with regard to libraries. We had an incident here in Boston where the FBI came in and said, well, we're just going to, you know, we think that there's some connection to somebody here sending out email, and we can just go through all the computers. Now, the librarian held the line there and said, wait a minute, hold on. But I'm telling you, this is just more of the same. At every turn that we look, the Bush administration is trying, not trying, has made efforts and been successful in wearing down what now appears to be a very thin line around our privacy. And what amazes me is there doesn't seem to be, from a population standpoint, enough outcry. Certain people are saying it. Here's the sponsor of the bill, Susan Collins, saying, I'm surprised. I don't know what this means. This is not what I meant to have happen in this bill. But the folks in general, I don't think, understand that we're moving toward a police state, because the one significant part of a police state is controlling all information. And this, to me, is quite serious.
Marcelo, police state, very strong words. What do you think about that?
It is very worrisome because, as Callie said, this is really more of the same. It's as if the administration did not understand and did not hear the very loud message the American voters sent in the last election about changing the course. This is all part of the same story. It's confounding issues. It's confusing issues. The senator herself seemed very, very surprised by the legalese in terms of the government's new ability to open our mail without a warrant. Again, it did not. The administration did not get the wake-up call in terms of new direction. The American public voted very vigorously against precisely these kinds of interventions.
Now, Michael, if Callie is saying that the public has to step up and challenge this if, in fact, there's any point to changing things, is that really who should be bearing responsibility? Whose responsibility is it to really understand and to clarify what is going on with legislation around privacy?
Legislation is the responsibility of Congress. So the question is not whether or not the administration heard the message from the people. They don't care. They did hear the message, but they don't care. They have two more years. The question is, did Congress hear the message of the people? And because this is messing with a law that Congress passed. So if the president has put a signing statement saying, well, I interpret the law this way. Now, you guys may think it means that, but I think it means this. And it continues to give me unusual authority to do certain things, which may be a violation in your eyes of the liberty of the people, I see my role as president of protecting the people. So, I do not buy this argument, this rhetoric, really, that Congress doesn't have any power to do anything. If the president has issued a signing statement clarifying what he thinks the law says, then it's Congress's obligation, to answer your question directly, to say, no, we don't mean that, and you must not do that, and we're going to amend the law and make it clear to you that what we mean in this law. So if you're going to defy our will, then we'll have a constitutional challenge. You know, I must tell you that, you know, this is like the government now, like AOL is saying, you've got mail. They're going to tell us we got mail and we read it already. I'm just shocked out. I can't say any more than that.
Well, you know, I'm going to turn to another topic that is along the same lines and go back to Cali. The White House and the Secret Service signed a memo last spring that could keep records of who visits the White House private. The 5-page memo was dated May 17th, and it says all entry and exit data on White House visitors are presidential records. That means they don't have to be disclosed under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, these logs are kept by the Secret Service, and the White House is calling on the memo to deal with a separate problem. The Washington Post is suing to get access to the logs, and administration lawyers are using the memo to block that, because if the logs were Secret Service logs, it would have been easier to get disclosure. Now, it's a complicated story, Callie, but basically it boils down to whether or not reporters can get access. This is the same kind of access that was used during the Clinton era to see who went where and when. Are reporters losing abilities to find out what's going on in government?
Reporters are losing, and when reporters lose access to information, because the job of the reporter is to bring that to the people, then the people lose. And again, this is something that somehow we journalists have to be better able to describe what we do to folks to make them understand that this is a huge, this is not even a warning bell, this is like a gong somewhere. It's not just about what reporters can have access to in the longer term, it's also about what historians can write about. So many historians have use those logs to look at what was happening at the time of various times as they're reporting. And this is important information. It may seem simple, but it's not. I remind people you brought up about the Clinton administration. Oh, the same folks that are trying to shut off these logs or access to them now were happy to show to reporters how many times Monica Lewinsky was in and out of the White House. So this is what we're talking about. We're blocking information about Dick Cheney or whatever his activities were, because we don't want people to understand what was happening with him. But in other circumstances, as we have well seen before, you know, here we are on the hypocritical thing. They were most happy to put this information out there. So this is a loss, not just on one story. This is what I want to make clear. It's not just about the Washington Post trying to get information about Dick Cheney. This has a long-term impact about the people understanding the business of government and what goes on in our White House. I mean, we put the guy in there. This should be public information.
Marcelo, a lot of times I'll talk to people about politics and they say, you know what, I'm just tired. I don't want to hear about this anymore. I know there's bad things going on. I just can't take it. So have we reached a point where people aren't even advocating to know more because they feel they'll just be depressed by whatever they find out?
Well, apathy, depression, lack of engagement is, of course, very dangerous for a democracy. But this is a part of a broader culture of secrecy and lack of transparency that is immensely debilitating to the democratic promise and to the democratic process. This is part of the dense fog of politics as usual. We're losing access to information. Information is power. Information is knowledge. The business of the people needs to be a transparent project. And unfortunately, this would suggest that whole sectors of what's going on, sections of what's going on in the White House will be off the record, as Callie says, not just on a story-by-story basis, but forever in terms of knowing in the long term the history of this administration and beyond.
We are talking with Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator, and you're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea catching you up, and we're going to go next to Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Have people given up on having any influence on the government in cases like this, in issues like secrecy, Michael?
Oh, of course not. You have groups, civil liberties groups, and reporters groups. The First Amendment, you know, freedom of inquiry here is very important. Freedom of information, the right to tell the people about what is happening in government, who is visiting with your governors, who is visiting with your president, who is talking with your president and your vice president. These are very important matters in terms of, as Marcelo would say, recording the history of the White House, recording the history of government. So people have not given up, and people will never give up. I mean, they will have setbacks, and there will be litigation, and the New York Times and the Washington Post and every other reporters group will insist on having these records, just like we would insist on having these records in any other public office, whether at the state level. We need it in the federal level. So my question for the White House is, I mean, why? Why are you keeping the records of people who are visiting private and secret? Why? There's one thing to have conversations that are private and confidential because you're planning and you're planning policy, et cetera. But the mere presence of someone in the White House meeting with either Cheney or Bush is now to be classified information? Ridiculous.
All right, let's move along to another topic. This is one that pertains very much to the questions of race that we often tackle here on News and Notes. The National Association of Black Journalists, or NABJ, is concerned about black journalists at the Philadelphia Inquirer. The company announced layoffs recently, and the NABJ believes African Americans are twice as likely to lose their jobs than their white counterparts. The Philadelphia Inquirer began informing 71 newsroom employees last week that they would be released as of January 17th, and early reports show that 22.5% of the people laid off so far are African American, and a little more than 11% of the Inquirer's newsroom staff is black. Callie, is this just getting into the whole last hired, first fired, or is this something more pernicious? Or even if it is last hired, first fired, does that still set newsroom equality back?
It's definitely last hired, first fired, and it sets newsroom equality back. The last time that the American Society of Newspaper Editors reported its findings about its own stated goals of getting equity in the newsrooms with regard to racial balance and diversity, it was far short of the goal they had hoped to achieve by, I think, 2005. And now this just goes, I don't even know where to begin now. And the problem is that I think it's against a backdrop of an atmosphere of so many layoffs and so many changes, not just in the newspaper industry, but just for the moment, focus on that. And with the brutal kinds of closings and changes going on, you know, the white folks are saying, don't complain to us. We don't have any jobs either. Everybody's hurting here. So how, you know, why do we have to pay attention to the fact that there will be a loss of diversity in these cuts when we are all being bottom lined, as it will? Well, of course, what you have to understand and what my response is that if we are, as purveyors of information to the public, to reflect the public that we cover, then this cannot be. If there must be layoffs, they have to be proportional to the population and to the readership and to all of that. And that's just not being taken in consideration. Once again, diversity goes to the bottom of the list.
Marcelo, you're a professor of globalization and education at NYU. So you deal with a lot of young people, and young people are not huge fans of newspapers by and large. There's a huge drop off in how young people get their news, more likely to be from electronic sources, whether it's television or whether it's electronic devices or computers. Is America really leaving behind the newspaper age? That's something that a lot of people have been concerned about, and it could speak to the issue of diversity. What if you have newspapers that remain with an overwhelmingly white older audience, and then younger people who are more multiracial as a whole just go somewhere else to get their news?
Well, unfortunately, I think that's exactly what's going on. I think that journalism in general, there is a great deal of lack of trust in terms of the public. Journalism no longer commands the great respect that it once did in terms of its ability to deliver the news to the people. And young folk today have multiple other ways to get their information. The question is, are they getting quality information? Are they getting the kind of information that, as Kali suggested, really reflect the complexity, the diversity of the society we're becoming? When minority journalists are taken out of positions where they can influence the course and the development of what becomes news and how news are delivered, interpreted, analyzed, then we have a problem. We have a problem because we know that diversity in opinion, diversity in terms of experience, diversity in terms of background, in general enhances the complexity that can be brought into any given specific issue. So this is a step backwards. I think print journalism is losing terrain to the electronic media, and I believe that there is a very clear generational issue. The matter remains the quality of the information that our young people are accessing, and that's, I'm not so optimistic about that either.
Michael, we only have a little bit of time, but is this a civil rights issue? Who remains in the newsroom?
Well, look, we live by slogans in American society. You know, you can't have proportional layoffs by race. You just can't. You can barely have proportional representation in terms of hiring by race. So you certainly can't do it by race. You know, last hired, first fired. You know, employers don't have to have these things in their contracts. They can hold out and not sign a contract that says first fired, last hired, first fired. So if you're interested in diversity, another slogan, if you're interested in diversity, don't sign documents that when the push comes to shove and there's retrenchment, you have to lay off minority people first. So I think we have to look at it more from a point of view of survival. Newspapers are under retrenchment. They are laying people off because they can't afford them anymore. And the question is managerial rights and management's rights to decide who's the best. I hope that's the standard as opposed to the race standard.
All right,
making a decision about who's the best to be kept.
All right. Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Kali Crossley, social and cultural commentator, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco of New York University. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.